Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. I wanted to share with you a few comments that I received on the last several books we've talked about. But these are also related to H's for Hawk. And so I just thought they were very good. And the first one is from Australia. And this person says, "Hello, JBL. Have wholly enjoyed your series of Robert Seethaler's work. I did not read the book, but really enjoyed listening to the insights of the panel. It came across to me from the discussion that the young boy arriving in the mountains had found a mother type, that is, a Mother Earth. Marie seems to have also fulfilled that type in the description of her and the Earth and in that analogy. The building of a home in the mountain and the ending of feeling to come home all seem to suggest a Mother Nature scenario at play in the man's mind." She goes on to say, I hope I might find the time to read the book at a later date, but I thoroughly enjoyed slipping away with your panel while I do the ironing to contemplate the topics and the thoughts of discussion." And so I thought that's really great that even if you can't read the book, certainly you can listen in. Now, she goes on to say, "I'm not sure if you are familiar with Richard Fidler. He is an ABC interviewer here in Australia, and I love to listen to his interviews of writers. He has a lovely manner of coaching out the thoughts and getting behind the thinking of the authors. I'm sending you a link for an interview he did with Helen MacDonald. I hope you might have time to listen to it. I enjoyed the interview when it aired. Looking forward to the next round of discussion regarding H is for Hawk." So that is from Australia, and in my last program, I did talk about listening to an interview, and it was exactly this interview. So if all of you are interested, just remember, it's Richard Fidler, and he is an ABC interviewer in Australia. Now, you can get his podcast on Apple iTunes, so you just have to type in either Richard Fidler or Helen MacDonald, and that podcast will come up, and it is very interesting, and it's what I actually gave you some of the stories from last week from that podcast. So it's really pretty good. So there you can now trace down that interview. Here's another one. This is from the New England area. This is one from the U.S., but it's from New England. It says, "Dear JBL and panel members," so they're writing to our panel members now. See, I needed the panel members to get people to start writing. "This is the first time I've written you, although I thought of it often during the past year. It's about time." And I'd agree, it's about time. I'm glad that this person has finally written. Now, they're very honest. He says, "Except for Shakespeare, which I tried to read somewhat lamely but couldn't get into, I've read everything you recommended by borrowing from my local library. I know you recommend buying the books, and I understand why. You have a large local audience, and the local libraries around Edmond would not be able to keep up with the demand. Plus, if the author is worthwhile reading, it is good to support him or her financially. I will probably buy a couple of the books which I would like to read again in the future. The Old Man and the Sea and 13 Hours in Benghazi stirred me the most so far. I have read the two latest books you have been or will be discussing, A Whole Life and H is for Hawk, and they have made me think more about character development and human nature. Andreas Edger is a fictional character. Helen MacDonald is a real-life character. Both are loners, but the similarities end there. Maybe that's one of the reasons you recommend them back-to-back." Now, that's not really why I recommend them. This is our Around the World series, and I kind of wanted to pick up H's for Hawk because Helen MacDonald is from England. But this person goes on to say, "Looking forward to conversations on how JBL might compare the two books and to your future recommendations. I haven't read too much of interest in my adult life since my 30s until the JBL program. I am now 73. Thanks for starting up my love of literature again. So those are some really nice comments, and we do appreciate getting those comments. Well, today I do want to get back into Vicki Kroc's review of her book, and still want to tell some stories as we go along. I think it does make it quite interesting. But if you look at Vicki's interview, and if you've already got into the book, and it appears like more and more people have gotten into the book, and I think that's really great, and I really am thankful that this is working well for people. But one of the things that Vicki points out, and one of the things that definitely Helen points out in her book, is actually the training of the goshawk, or Mabel, if you remember last time we gave you the name of the goshawk, which is kind of an unusual name for what I would consider a hawk. I mean, I guess if I were really, into falconry and I was raised around hawks, I'd probably pick maybe a different kind of name. But Mabel actually fits this goshawk very well. And by the way, also I wanted to tell you that I did, last time I brought up the question, is there a falconry association in Oklahoma? And by the way, I found out there is. It's a well-attended falconry association here in Oklahoma. So you'll have to forgive me, all you Oklahoma falconers, for not knowing that before I opened my big fat mouth. But anyway, there is a falconry association, and they just had an event where they were flying their hawks and doing what falconers do. So I think that's really great. I might actually try and get out to see one of these events one of these days. So, but the thing that's really interesting, and remember that Helen had slipped into this depression, and she actually began to really close herself off to the world. And in some ways, if you read about falconry, there is this time period between the falconer and the hawk where they do kind of have to isolate themselves so they get used to each other. And, Helen does quote a book by T.H. White where he learned how to be a falconer, and he did some things in a very similar way, although Helen realized that he actually did it quite wrong, and she actually had a better experience with it. But you have to remember, and this really does kind of put you off when you're reading the book, when you first get started, is she... Once her father died and once she decided she was going to train this hawk, she totally isolated herself from all other human beings. And essentially, she shut herself into her house and she shut herself in just with the bird. And that was like her primary contact. Now, obviously, she had to go out and do shopping and get groceries and things like that. But, to really make this connection with a goshawk, a falconer has to really, they have to kind of get alone together and know each other. And essentially what Vicki does bring out very well in her review is that actually the training with Mabel went really well, but for Helen to recover from her depression, that was not going as well at all, not very well at all. And so, in fact, what Vicki Kroc says is that while the training with the hawk was going very well, Helen McDonald coming out of depression or coming out of her discouragement because of her father's death was not going very well at all. So here's what Vicki says in her review. It says, there are tearful misunderstandings and glorious steps forward, but McDonald's progress is not as steady as her hawk's. Training proceeds, but not without an existential hitch. While the steps were familiar, McDonald writes, the person taking them was not. I was in ruins. Some deep part of me was trying to rebuild itself, and its model was right there on my fist. The hawk was everything I wanted to be, solitary, self-possessed, free from grief, and numb to the hurts of human life. Now, again, that to me is great writing. But it does show that maybe the state of mind she was in, and sometimes that's shocking to face. But like I said before, I've had a little bit of experience. you know, with depression. And that's very often what happens to people that get depressed. They do shut themselves off. And actually, it's not a very good thing to do at all, because it just seems to compound the problem or make the problem worse. But I do think it's interesting, once you get into the book, is the training was going so well, where Mabel, who is the goshawk, by the way, Mabel was actually really responding well to the training. Helen could put her four or five feet away, do her whistle, and then the hawk would fly to her and then land on her leather glove, and then be able to eat. And she'd have little pieces of meat or these little birds or little, you know, rabbit's legs. And remember, hawks are hunters. They have to hunt game, and they hunt rabbits and, you know, little animals, and that's how they get their food. And so that training was going really well, but she realized that the hawk, if they were going to start flying, if they were going to start hunting in the wild, Helen was going to have to get out of the house. She was going to have to take the bird on her arm and start walking in society. And it really is quite fascinating. It's just amazing to me that there's so much effort that has to go into training a falcon, and there's a lot of concentration the falconer has to do to learn to read how the hawk is responding to the training. And what's really quite fascinating about the training is, you know, you cannot be violent with the bird. In other words, if the bird does not do what you want, you can't, you know, hit it with a stick or, you know, jerk it, you know, with a chain. But you have to always be gentle and always be inviting. And so it really takes a certain character or a certain personality to actually be able to be a falconer. And so remember, it was an aristocratic sport. It was a sport of nobles. And they really had to be a certain, let's say, high-quality character to be able to even get a hawk to even train with it. So it is an amazing kind of thing. But Helen kind of wanted to escape what she was. I know I've had some people comment that, well, she was kind of obsessed with her father, and, you know, she was really kind of odd, and you know, she really kind of went off the beam, which I think Helen would agree with, is, you know, I don't necessarily believe that she was obsessed with her father, but I believe she was very close to her father. And not a lot of people today are as close to their fathers as maybe they should be. But she was very close, and, you know, he did, and she did love birds, and he enjoyed falconry. She enjoyed falconry. They did it together, and they were really quite successful at it and enjoyed it. And so you can see that if she lost her father and she wants to grapple with that and how to deal with that, you can see why she might go back to falconry, just to kind of, you know, bring her father back in her life, or maybe not have him exit as quickly as he did. Remember, he died on the street in London, and the hospital had to inform them that he died. He died by himself. And, you know, so those things are really, really quite difficult to handle. But it's interesting is Helen realized that she had to take the bird, or take the falcon, or not the falcon, I guess I should say, take the hawk. Because it's a goshawk. It's different than like a peregrine falcon or something like birds like that. And remember, I'm into literature, not necessarily into falconry. But I guess Helen realized she couldn't lock up the bird in the house the way she was. And so she decides that she's going to take this bird out of the house. And it is really quite interesting. The bird does have to get used to, let's say, being on the falconer's arm, but also being outside and not being distracted by things. And here's what she writes in her book, and I think it's just a great scene in the book. She says, "I'm in an expansive celebratory mood. Today, Mabel flew 4 feet to my fist from the back of a chair in my front room. 'You're doing brilliantly,' I tell her. 'Time for a walk. Let's go and meet my friend's kids. They'll love you.' So she goes. She decides to take this hawk out on her arm and go visit some friends. Now, if someone in my neighborhood comes out of their house and they have a hawk on their arm, and this is definitely a bird of prey, I'm going to stay pretty much clear of that person. I mean, birds of prey, they can really hurt you with their talons. It says, a few minutes later, I knock on the door and my friend's husband opens it. My hawk flinches. So do I. This man was exceptionally rude to me once. But whatever, it doesn't matter. Maybe he was having a bad day. Forgive and forget. My friend isn't in. I stand before the door and tell him about the hawk. I tell him her age, her sex, her species, her name. I tell him that I thought that her taming would be the kind of agonizing battle I read about in The Goshawk. And The Goshawk is T.H. White's book. She says, but it's been a total surprise, I say. There's been no battle at all, which isn't my doing, I'm sure. She's freakishly calm. And the man inclines his head to one side and smiles. Well, he says, that'll be a gendered thing. And she looks, gendered? Yes, you're a woman and she's a female. Of course you get on, he says. So I think you can imagine how that made Helen feel. And it's like, all right, that's kind of a chauvinist comment. And so anyway, what happens is it drives her in some ways. It's actually part of the thing or part of a condition that actually began to drive her out of her depression. And it is kind of interesting there when a person does get depressed and then they actually come out of the depression, there is generally something unusual that will trigger it. And then they wake up and you come out of your daze or your maze or your fog. But he kind of angered her so much that she went home and she began to dig out all of her old books on falconry to see if other people had the same experience she did with goshawks. And she makes a statement in the book, and I think we'll definitely be talking about this more when we get into the panel. But she goes and she starts researching about goshawks because there's something else I want to reveal here before too long about what she experienced with the hawk that she never expected to experience. She says, this is the very next page, but this is page 110, by the way, and page 111. She says, I pull all the falconry books off the shelves and pile them up on the floor. Then I sit cross-legged next to the hawk. He says, right, Mabel, I say, goshawks are boy birds, are they? Let's see what the boys have said about you. I pick up Humphrey App Evans, Falconry for You, and read. She purrs and chirps to her master, rubbing her head against him, but she is proud and wild and beautiful. Her anger is terrible to behold. She can be moody and sulky. And all that Helen says in the book is, because she's finding something different with Mabel. Now I open Gilbert Blane, and there I read of her peculiar and somewhat sulky disposition. She will set her mind on making herself as disagreeable as she can, he explained. Will exasperate you to such a degree that you will long to wring her neck. Then to Frank Illingsworth, Falcons and Falconry, never was there a more contrary bird than a gauze. Her sole purpose in life seems to be to aggravate her owner. And then Helen says to her bird, Mabel says, Mabel, this is very dubious, I say. Then I start on the Victorian falconers. Charles Hawkins Fisher did not like her or her kin, and Freeman and Salvin considered it a thousand pities that the temper of this bird is so very far from amiable. It is, in fact, sulky. Sulky. And then she goes, Mabel, you know what you are? You're a woman. You're a hormonal woman. It's made such ghastly sense. It is why these falconers never wondered if their own behavior had anything to do with why their goshawks took the stand in trees or flew into fits of nerves or rage or attacked their dogs or decided to fly away. It wasn't their fault. Like women, goshawks were inexplicable, sulky, flighty, and hysterical. Their moods were pathological. They were beyond all reason. And so the thing is, you know, there's the Helen is kind of learning something about all of this, about how you relate to the birds. And what she's saying is that the men that were training female goshawks were like treating them like their view of women, and you know, had their chauvinistic views. And but she learned something from history. She says, but reading further back, I find that in the 17th century, goshawks weren't vile at all. They were sociable and familiar, though by nature altogether shy and fearful, wrote Simon Latham in 1615. They take exception at rough and harsh behavior from the man, but if treated with kindness and consideration, are as loving and fond of her keeper as any other hawk whatsoever. These hawks, too, were talked about as if they were women. They were things to win, to court, to love, but they were not hysterical monsters. They were real, contradictory, self-willed beings, stately and brave, but also shy and fearful. If they behaved in ways that irritated the falconer, it was because he had not treated them well, had not demonstrated continual loving and courteous behavior towards them. The falconer's role, wrote Edmund Burt, was to provide for all his hawk's needs so that she might have joy in herself. I am her friend, he wrote of his goshawks, and she is my playfellow. And so what Helen noticed is that the longer back she went in history of falconry, she saw a different attitude about the goshawks. And so it is really very interesting how people's attitudes about a lot of things have changed. And of course, if you go back into medieval times, I really believe that they had a better sense of relationships and what a man's role was and what a woman's role was, and how the two complemented each other, and we have really lost that today. And so it's kind of like Helen discovered this with this goshawk. And I'm not really trying to get it into attacking feminism or anything like that. That's not my motive here. My motive is to just talk about what's kind of surprising about the book. Now, what Helen realized is this her training of the goshawk was so different than what she had read in more current writers. But here's something really fascinating. As she goes, I close my copy of Burt's treatise of hawks and hawking with a snap, and as the cover falls, my hawk makes a curious, bewitching movement. She twitches her head to one side, then turns it upside down, and continues to regard me with the tip of her beak pointing at the ceiling. I'm astonished. I have seen this head turning before. Baby falcons do it when they play, but goshawks? Really? I pull a sheet of paper towards me, tear a long strip from one side, scrunch it into a ball, and offer it to the hawk in my fingers. She grabs it with her beak. It crunches. She likes the sound. She crunches it again and then lets it drop, turning her head upside down as it hits the floor. I pick it up and offer it to her again. She grabs it and bites it very gently over and over again. She looks like a glove puppet, a Punch and Judy crocodile. Her eyes are narrowed in bird laughter. I am laughing too. I roll a magazine into a tube and peer at her through it as if it were a telescope. She ducks her head to look at me through the hole. She pushes her beak into it as far as it will go, biting the empty air inside. Putting my mouth to my side of my paper telescope, I boom into it. Hello, Mabel. She pulls her beak free. All the feathers on her forehead are raised. She shakes her tail rapidly from side to side and shivers with happiness. So Helen MacDonald, actually, while training this goshawk, actually does be able to is actually able to come out of her depression. She starts learning something so different about these birds that she wasn't even expecting. Here's what Vicki Kroc says in her interview about this whole experience. She says, looking back at her mad morning, she realizes a painful transformation is taking place. And so the training is going really well. Helen's recovery wasn't going so well. She says, but what the mind does after losing one's father isn't just to pick new fathers from the world, but to pick new selves to love them with. And so as she goes through this training and she's discovering that what she had read about goshawks really wasn't true, that it's the way you treat them, it's the way you behave with them that really brings them in to respond with you better. So that's really, really, really fascinating. Now, this will be our last program as the terms of an introduction, and then next time we're going to be getting into our 60-plus panel, and we'll probably have about three programs for you. So if you have not read H is for Hawk, if you're interested now, certainly get the book. I think you will enjoy it. And we'll talk about some, I think there are some difficult things in the book that I didn't necessarily like, but I think we can explain through some of that. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at jbliterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. The address is facebook.com/justthebestliterature. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.